You're listening to a Rare Drop podcast. Check us out at raredrop.co.
When your coffee is freshly roasted and ethically sourced, it's music to your ears. Shake up the way you wake up at kingscoastcoffee.com.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Broman Podcast, episode 152. We did 152. It's 152 more than I thought when we got started. It's pretty impressive. Today, I am joined by the multi-talented and incredible Mike Botkin, who has held many cool positions throughout the gaming industry. He is currently and always employed as a freelance director of photography, technical director, gaffer, producer, cam operator. Essentially, if you need it done and produced, Mike is your guy. Mike, welcome to the podcast.
Appreciate it, Ben. Thanks for having me on.
Really excited to have you on. So something that has kind of been super cool for me to watch is when I got started streaming, I was like, you do everything yourself. And as the space kind of got built up around the streaming industry, you know, I started in 2013 when people didn't believe what I did was a real job. And now there is an entire industry sector of content creation that is kind of publicly recognized. And one of the most important things for people who aren't doing it all by themselves, aka any esports team, large production house, large brand, is producers. I didn't know I produced my own show when I got started. I had no idea. So I'm really curious, what got you interested in being kind of a serial producer, working with other people, working for yourself, and working with brands? Where did that spark come from in the beginning?
So, like, very early on, like most people, I had no idea what I wanted to do with
that. Yes.
And yes, perfect. And so, like, when I was getting ready to go to college, I had no idea. Like, I played sports all through and was either going to go play lacrosse or I didn't know. And I got my bachelor's actually in psychology. And then I intended to go get my master's and be a therapist. I was going to do counseling, like LMFT and stuff like that, because I've got a younger brother who's autistic, and I kind of wanted to just better understand my brother. And, you know, that was kind of my impetus for at least like, all right, well, I at least have that interest. But I never really stopped to think, like, what do I really want to do? I had no idea. And then my first job out of school actually was working for the Dallas Cowboys. And I did some live event work for them. And I had a meeting with a boss who told me, hey, you're going to do video stuff with our photographer, because this is the year that Nike got the contract for uniforms and kit for the league.
Okay.
And so they were going to have this whole big suite of, like, you know, video content and photo for new merch that was going to go into the store for Nike, but specifically the Dallas e-commerce store. And I told him, like, I don't know how to do video at all. Like, I've never done that. And he's like, well, you're smart. You'll figure it out. And that was kind of my first, like, step into it. It was just very much happenstance. Yeah. And worked with a photographer a lot. Our name's Courtney Gould. She was super cool and, like, very, like, a great beginning teacher, and, like, was not shaming at all. Like, oh, I get this moron that doesn't know what he's doing. No, she was very inclusive, which was kind of awesome. You know, I think that was also a big factor in that, you know, it felt welcoming, like, right off the rip. And was like, wow, I want to do this the whole time. And, like, this sounds really cool. Like, I want to do more of this. Because at the time, too, like, I'm doing events at, you know, the Cowboys Stadium for home games and training camp and, you know, having to, like, load boxes and break down tents and stuff and doing this as, like, an aside. And my boss at the time was like, well, you can't do that the whole time. I need you to do this. I'm like, bet. And so I was talking with my girlfriend at the time, and she's now my wife. And I was like, I kind of want to do this, but I don't have the skill set yet to do it. And, you know, I'd maybe been out of school for maybe a year, maybe a little less than. And I looked into, like, what I would need to do to start getting into it. It's like, well, I've already got a bachelor's. If I go back to school, like, at a CC, I could maybe be back, like, working full time, maybe in a year and a half, 2 years at the most. And she's like, well, we're young enough and we're both kind of working. You could like go wait tables or something. We can get our expenses covered. We'll be fine. Do it. If you want to do it, do it. And like around that time, right before I made the jump, Casey Neistat put out a video that he did for Nike. It was like for their version of like a Fitbit.
Right.
It was the Make It Count video. Did you ever see that one?
I did. I know that one.
Yeah. So that video was the little like flick of the pebble off the mountain that like just pushed me over the edge. Like I don't know how, like that just video inspired me and just set my heart on fire for like, this is what I want to do. And full sent it, went back to school, interned toward the end, and then got into production that way. Started, from the bottom up, intern to grip to cam op, and started kind of climbing through that. And so that was kind of my initial bit to get in. But a lot of it was still stemmed from, when I was looking at getting into therapy and like counseling, a lot of the reasoning behind that too was to try to make an impact on people's lives, to connect. And, with video content and storytelling, there's a way to reach people beyond language barriers, life experience through video and photo that, that just breaks down walls so fast. Like you could not even speak a lick of English, but you could still see a video and still feel something. And I think that's kind of what has pulled me through and still continues to pull me through is like, even though, you may be making an ad for somebody, but like, there's still this sense of like, you can still evoke an emotion or a feeling or a sensation or an idea that can be understood by anyone.
Yeah. Video, visual art in all of its form it's always so cool to see how things can transcend, how you can tell a story without words that everybody understands, It's great how Pixar can put out a short and make all of us cry, in 7 minutes about characters we had no idea about, not a word spoken. But yeah, video has that ability.
I mean,
to
like
transcend.
Look at Wall-E.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like that, in the good chunk of like what the first like quarter of the movie, there's like not a single like line of dialogue at all.
It's awesome. It's truly incredible. So you got your start. You were kind of looking for, you knew your path, you knew what you wanted to do, and you looked for new ways to kind of go about that than what you originally intended. I totally can relate to that. I have an unrelated degree that, but I was really like, I like bringing people together. And that obviously makes a ton of sense with what I do now. But it's always interesting how our goals, we think that they are defined by like that one thing. Like I have to do this to meet my goals. And as we grow and as the world changes around us, we adapt to like new ways of doing things. You've actually worked for and with a company that a lot of people who are listening to this podcast probably recognize. And I wanted to talk a little bit about what is it like working for a massive content house like Optic Gaming?
So like working for Optic, which was previously Envy, it was something that I was hoping to do after working in media for about almost 5 years, like about halfway through my career. I wanted to try to find a way to bridge a passion for things that I was doing on the side, whether that was, playing games and then starting to dabble into streaming, but also bringing my professional skill set too. Like, was it possible to bring that together? And so it was just a more so just like trying to see like, is that even possible? Does that exist? And found out through a former client who told me that they were going to be staffing up as Envy was migrating from Charlotte to Dallas. This is right before the beginning of the Overwatch League and city-based franchised esports. And was like, all right, cool, I'll apply. And she's like, I already put in a good word for you. You're good. It's like, all right. Yeah. And I ended up getting the job and started working there. And while it was really cool to have like people that were very experienced, from a traditional production background too, when you start to get into esports too, you start to get a bit of a mixed bag. You'll have some people that have a lot of experience, but it's been a lot of, kind of learning on their own. And so finding different ways to collaborate and work with folks that have just different backgrounds that are, I felt like even more diverse than I had encountered from the traditional side was a cool challenge too. But also, it was really exciting because it now felt like two things that I was working on, whether that was working with sponsors or partners, players, teams, all that. It was really cool to just be like, when I'm looking at Twitter and I'm looking at gaming news, like especially if it's like a competitive shooter, it's like, this is this is work research.
Ah, yes.
This is, my wife's like, get off Twitter. I'm like, this is work. I promise.
It's not doom scrolling. It's related. I promise.
Exactly. Like, especially like even during like during lockdown and everything, when Valorant and stuff was coming out, it's like I was glued to Twitter and everything for a while because like this was very important information for us as we were getting ready to field a team and, you know, becoming like a sponsor team within it, or like being one of the initial like launch teams for that league, or not the league, but, you know,
yeah,
the competitive scene for that.
So what?
And so,
sorry, finish your thought.
No, it's all good. No, when good, no.
When you're doing research like that, like what are you looking mm-hmm. for? Right. Like, I know that the space is so new. There's so many different ways to approach production. So like, what were you looking for during that time period? New competitive shooters coming out. So you were like, what were you tuning your eyes into?
So a lot of it usually kind of comes down to what's the voice of that community off the rip. And if it's identifiable. So a great example of two very different kind of audiences out, and both are, you know, major franchised esports leagues. You have the Overwatch League and you have the Call of Duty League. You have Overwatch fans and COD fans. Very different kind of fan
yes.
bases. Both are competitive shooters, sure, and are team-based shooters. It's not a solo game. It's very much a team game. Roughly the same amount of players per starting roster, but drastically different tones. You know, Overwatch is very much a more lighthearted, fun-loving, inclusive, living, you know, they don't mind memeing on themselves, and it's a much more playful tone. And then you look at COD, and COD's more like the NBA and a lot more serious. And like, I don't want to really make fun of myself. Like, occasionally memes will make their way through, but it's very much a very image conscious tone. And so, you know, those are usually the things I try to identify, at least in the beginning. And so with Valorant, you kind of saw this blend of like, yeah, you had some fun loving approach from Overwatch because one, very like character driven style presentations of the heroes and the agents, you know, very similar to Overwatch, but you're also getting a lot of interest from the CS crowd,
right?
Which I would say is very similar to like soccer and, you know, guys that are very, you know, very image conscious as well and carry themselves very highly and like to look good. And so it's like, okay, so this is going to be kind of like a hybrid of like CS dudes that like to also be a little playful. Like there's a little bit of playful banter. And so that starts to almost kind of identify the tone that you could carry from, whether it's going to be a docuseries or how you can present like tips or social content and things like that. Like, and so you're just trying to find like how you can be in line with the community. So you're not looking at, you know, looking like a pariah, but you look like you're contributing to what's already the natural voice. And also just paying attention to that community's own content too. Like how are people that are just fans of the game, how are they responding? You know, are they, you know, are they becoming more playful? Are they highly critical? Are they analytical? Or is there like a lot of like, you know, is there a lot of back and forth between like the devs or not? Like how open line communication is with everybody. And so usually that's the stuff I'm looking for too. And then also, what information is not being shown? You know, are there a lot of tips that are available or not? Are people sharing their settings? Are they very closed on terms of how they share their stuff? Like how open-ended are high level players with the community at large?
Interesting. So when you were breaking all that stuff down, you were looking for making sure that you found the right voice for everything first. And then after that,
voice matters.
Yeah, and then after that, you get brought into everything else, right? So I think that's, I mean, personally, that's something that we tell brands we work with here all the time that want to get into the gaming space, is like you have to use the right words when you're communicating. Like you have to speak in the language of the community, because if you just show up and you're like, hi, I'm brand and I'm here to do brand things. you know, like maybe, because I always like to leave space for the exception, right? Like maybe that'll work for one team. Like there can be one kitschy group that's like, oh yeah, like we're the non-brand brand. But it's not everyone can do that. You need to show up, especially if you're the kind of brand or community, I mean, if you're an esports team, you can't get it wrong. If you're, you know, but even if you're an external brand, like you have a set of goals that you're trying to accomplish. So you need to know how to speak about your goals as a charity or as like a consumer product or whatever in gaming without just, you know, let's put hyper color on it and RGB and like all of a sudden, yeah. and now it's gaming. So tone matters.
Exactly.
After you've nailed that down from a production standpoint, where do you usually go next?
Then usually it kind of comes down to what's the, at least from how we would try to approach it at Envy, now Optic, would be what's the kind of overall initial goal with us as a brand with this title? Because that's going to kind of inform like how invested are we in it? How much of, you know, resource can we fully contribute to it? Do we have the bandwidth to go, you know, hard on it? And so, you know, like with the Overwatch League and the Call of Duty League, obviously it has a high franchise buy-in. So from a just a top level down, like initially, yeah, there needs to be a pretty sizable presence in both those communities and leagues just because the company is already invested, you know, at a high level, you know, and even like for Halo as well. And so that'll kind of inform those choices. And then from there, it just kind of comes down to what can you sustain? And then also if sales and sponsorships is trying to sell against it, you know, whether they're negotiating deals with new partners or current partners, or if there's maybe some ways to restructure some stuff, that'll maybe inform some of the top level things. Like, okay, let's say for argument's sake, like you have X amount of like tips videos for the year for said client. And then you're like, okay, well, we're now getting into this new esport. Can we shave some of that off for this title? Because one, we're going to make these anyway. So let's go ahead and try to bring the brand in some way, whether that's through something as simple as a slate or if there's maybe a little bit more of a creative implementation of the brand, which I always would prefer to do that versus a slate. But sometimes a slate suffices and you don't balk at that, because that means you can do full control of what you like. Because sometimes some sponsors are content with that and some want to have a little bit more of an endemic inclusion.
Yeah. So many questions now. I want to know, what do you think? So we just like, we're talking like super high level, right? And you brought out some stuff that I really, really liked, because they're sort of a problem no matter where you're at in content creation, right? Is how do I funnel my creative energy for like the ideal outcome, right? Whether that's client work, whether that's, you know, driving sales. And I guess this is a huge question, right? Because you've got a long career doing this. Do you have a system, or do you have any tips or tricks for people who are in content creation now, or they've been in it for a while, on like, how can I look at my own systems? How can I look at my own systems, and then on the other side of that, like how do I improve it to better outcomes?
So are you trying to, you're more so asking, just to make sure I'm understanding what you're asking, that you want to a better way to implement sponsor deliverables or implementations of partnerships with your own content and your own brand?
Let's say I'm a broadcaster and I really want to knock the sponsored activation out. Or I'm looking to try and acquire sponsors. How can I, like, you know, how do you allocate time? Like, what do you prioritize when you're in a situation like that?
Okay. We'll go with the easy one and just say you already have a partner and a brand.
Yeah,
let's
do the easy one.
I think the other one's going to be a little bit harder. So let's say, we'll just say it's going to be like a piece of content, because it's a brand that I already partner with Advanced TV.
Okay.
So let's say you're trying to, you know, make good for your partner. I would try to look at already what the brand is doing from their own voice and their own choices for their own social posts. And if that is something that you can easily replicate on your own side, that's a very, I think, good baseline. But then too, look at your own voice and your own style and try to see if there's a way to bring that together. And sometimes that could be easier or harder depending on just, you know, how self-aware you may be about yourself, your own content, your own voice. But like, if, you know, let's say comedy is kind of your thing and you do like a lot of short form content, like on, you know, whether it's like on Insta or TikTok, or you're dabbling in YouTube shorts and, you know, maybe that's starting to, you know, pop off and bang for you. Maybe see if there's a way for you to like incorporate your partners within it to where it doesn't feel like, oh, hashtag ad,
right.
But make it to where it feels like it's, you know, it's kind of fun. And it could be just kind of like just some natural inclusion. Like, let's say you're making like a short about, you know, this tryhard that's getting ready to like, you know, go play trials or go play ranked in Valorant for a little bit. You know, you could have like this like overdecked out character that's getting ready to like, you know, go hard. And like part of it could be like taking like this overdosed version of like, you know, focus or something as they're getting ready to go. And then, you know, that could be ways to, you know, incorporate the brand, still fits what you naturally do. So it doesn't feel insanely out of place. But yeah, like I would, it's a lot of self-reflection, I think. And also just looking around your, at your peers, because like it or not, and you may not believe in this in yourself or not, whether you're someone that's streaming just for fun versus somebody, you know, like you, Ben, or someone who's been, who does this as their livelihood and their income, you know, the full spectrum, I think is fair to include in this. Every content creator is a peer, and some people may be doing it a little bit differently or better than you, or have been putting in more time or have just had more success, but that doesn't mean you're not still in the same peer space. You are. So that means you can learn from these people too, whether that means from direct lines of communication or even just from observing too. You know, even when I was, you know, learning in film and TV, every movie and TV show and every piece of video was something that I could learn from.
Totally.
You know, whether like, like one of my favorite movies is The Secret Life of Walter Mitty with Ben Stiller, because that movie, one, really, you know, moving to me on like on a human personal level. But the way that they did wide shots in that movie, like, just shattered my brain. Like, it made me rethink, like, dude, wide shots are sexy. I need to figure out how to do wide shots more and make them, like, really, really just like a picture. And, like, for the next, like, couple years, like, I intentionally was trying to do prettier, wider shots because I just felt inspired by that one film. And so I would try to translate that, too, to how you're looking at your peers. What do you enjoy? What's the kind of content that you consume? What kind of voice do you want to have? Are those married? Are they different? But a lot of it is self-reflection on, you know, how can you adapt something to you as well? Like, you know, what do you honestly want to do? You know, do you want to make skits and stuff like that? Or do you want to just take really dope, like Peter McKinnon photos of things? And if so, then like, go for it. Just try. I think a lot of it too is, you know, you got to shoot your shot, you know, for like, every like 100 shots you're going to take, maybe only a couple hit, but you need to take those 100. The reps are going to help you.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Getting started also helps you refine your goals so fast, because you could sit there and talk yourself in and out of everything like 100 times. Once you do it, you're going to go, you'll have hard evidence. You'll go, ooh, that felt like shit, or like, oh, I didn't like that. but okay. I mean, like, I've been doing this for 10 years, right? Like, there's definitely pieces of content I put out there, whether sponsored or otherwise, where I was like, man, that could have been better, you know, because it takes time. We all like you learn what works, you learn what doesn't, and you have to be able to take risks. And I think that initial risk of just getting started and risking only your time. It's just your time. Like I know you don't have an infinite amount of it, but, you know, it's worth investing time in yourself and learning what you like. That I guess I always think like there's a positive on the other side of every negative experience, right? When it comes to making content, like that worked, that didn't work, now I know. So the time investment will always garnish learnings for you, regardless of whether or not it's the thing you want to repeat. So I totally agree there. What is your favorite piece of content or your favorite project that you've gotten to work on in your career so far? And then if you can take us through a little bit of the production side, some magic, if you got to work any magic for
sure. So I would say easily what was my favorite, because it was like uniting the Avengers, and probably the closest thing I'll get to that, it was the beginning of the Call of Duty League, and how we were going to announce our roster, and it was going to be announced ahead of the brand, because everybody was announcing their teams, because it was just for some context, at the end of the final CWL, the Call of Duty World League, it was announced that not every team that could field a COD team was going to be moving forward into the city-based franchise league. So if you had a spot, cool. You could field a team. If you didn't, you can't field a team anymore. Dang. You're done. And not only that, too, that was also a drastic reduction in the amount of teams. So COD usually every offseason has roster mania, very similar to every other, you know, sport and other esports as well, where a lot of players that are really good hit the market. Everybody hit the market at the exact same time. Everybody was open season and available to be approached and negotiated. So it was an absolute madhouse because, you know, every day it'd be like, all right, this might be our starting five. Next day, four of those are already signed. We still got this one. The next day, completely new group. Like, I kid you not. And it changed like almost every few hours it could shift. So we had no idea what our team was going to be. We knew one player, Hook, was going to be definitely with us because he was kind of like our earmarked franchise player. But the others, other four, because that first year it was a 5v5 league. They've now condensed to 4v4. But that first year we knew that there were still four players that were unknown. And once we found out what our five were going to be, then it started to move towards, okay, cool. How do we want to announce the team? Because this is where you get the opportunity to almost set a whole new brand standard. Because we knew this team was going to have a different name. It was going to be separate from Envy. So it's like, all right, so this gets to be its own thing. And so talking with our owner, Mike Rufail, who's now he's chief gaming officer, which is a cool way of saying he's basically 110% focused on players, player development, contracts, and all that. He's totally on teams now and not just company as a whole, which I think is a perfect spot for Mike. But his big thing was he wanted to be perceived as like, you know, epic, legendary, professional, like, you know, we're badasses and we win.
Right.
He's like that. Those are like the driving emphasis that he wants for that team. He didn't want the Overwatch tone where it's a little bit more playful and open ended. He's like, no, I want this to be like a really just like serious, hard team. And one of the things that we brought up as well is like, well, what happens when we lose the first game? Does that voice still stay?
Right. Well, like, what happens?
Like, how long do we maintain that? Yeah. And no, he was very firm with it. He's like, stay the course. That's what it's going to be. It's like, okay, just making sure. And so we then got the entire creative team together with the social guys, the whole video team. And it became like this idea of like, okay, how are we going to do this? And we put out some content on the Fuel side where internally we called them vignettes, which is like almost like a micro doc, like a 2-minute cool VO with some really stylistic B-roll, but you know, almost these like little slices of different players reflecting on the season prior as they're going into the season. And they were very well received from the Fuel community as well as the Overwatch community. Because we were doing one where we had a player that was French and his English was not very good. So we did the whole thing in French and subtitled it into English. But we let him like, you know, tell his story about the struggles of early on coming into the league and the language barrier and how he's feeling at home. And, you know, he feels loved and appreciated by his team. And we had another player who was Korean and did not really speak English as well. So we did it in Korean and, you know, is coming out as being bisexual within it and how his team feels like he's very loved and accepted here, whereas in his home country, he's a bit of a pariah. Mm-hmm. And so we're looking at, okay, how can we maybe adapt this with our players and give them a chance to talk about, because some of the players on our roster were very much veterans of the scene. And then we had two guys that were going to be rookies. So three were vets, two rookies. And how can we tell their story up until this point, whether we're informing people of who they are at the time or now that they're all coming together, how can we, you know, bring that together but also make them look really sick?
Yeah.
And so our first step was just getting all the players together one-on-one. And we interviewed them individually for like about two hours while working on their own script. And so we didn't just like throw a script and say words, man. Yeah. It was very much a two-way street.
So you did 2 hours of interviews to get 2 minutes of footage?
Ooh, maybe about a minute and a half, 2 minutes of dialogue.
Yeah, that's how it is. Especially when you want it open-ended. You want their own words. That's so cool.
Exactly. And we wanted them to feel like they were participating in it. And, you know, we're helping them a little bit string it together so that it's cohesive. But, you know, making sure that especially the veteran guys as well, you know, that have an image and have like a, you know, an ethos within the COD scene. We want to make it feel like it's very much theirs. And then so with that, myself and another another shooter, we looked around different areas of the city because we were going to be representing Dallas. And so while they're scripting, we're also scouting different cool spots we could do in the city to not only showcase their story, but then start to bring that attachment of the city they're going to represent.
Right.
And so, you know, we're looking at like the arts district, the design district, different parts of the bridges, downtown, rooftops, but like trying to get around Dallas so that not only are we telling their story too, but we're also trying to bring in where they're going to play. And, you know, like just go ahead and make that attachment quickly. And then prior to that too, we were probably one of the last teams to fully announce our roster. But there are no secrets in COD.
Right.
Everybody knew who the roster was because players talk and the league talks and, you know, everybody knew. And so there was some pressure to go ahead and just shove it out, make it one long piece of content and put it out. And we're like, that's not how we've been capturing and prepping with it. We need we need to hold the line and we need to do it. And a thing that I kept trying to push back on, and I'm glad that I wasn't overruled on it because I totally could have been, was why own the day when you can own the week?
It's a good point.
You know, a lot of these guys, when they're posting, they're posting their content, you know, they get, you know, there's this big love splash of it all over Reddit. And then the next one comes out the next day, the one preceding's gone. No one cares.
Yep.
But if you do one piece per day for 5 days, I mean, you have something that everyone's going to talk about for, you know, a guaranteed 5 days in a row, and then maybe even through the weekend. So like everyone's going to be talking about your players and your team for at least a week and nobody else. Exactly. And so that was something that I felt like was the play to make. And especially at the quality we were doing it at too, you know, very all in house and just, I mean, it looked good, man. Like every one of our shooters, like they shot their best, like straight up. Like, and this is something that we put out, you know, in early or late 2019, early 2020. And I still think that's some of our best work.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it was so badass. Like even just like thinking about it, like back then, like, and we barely got it all together too. Cause not only were we shooting basically five little micro dots docs too, but we also had to get them cut.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say.
Super huge.
Keep going.
Yeah. And so like for the amount of editors we had, it was Joe, Ashley, CJ, Corey, so we had five editors ish juggling those, but we also were still like shooting them as we were trailing a little bit. Like it was coming down to like the wire.
Sprint. And it's like,
oh yeah. It's like, as the first one came out, I mean, the second one wasn't done yet. And so like they were all within, you know, 12 hours, sometimes less than, of when it was going to go out. Cause we were going to hit the same time every day.
Wow.
And, setting it as like a YouTube premiere, so like people know that this day another player is going to get announced. We internally knew which player was going to be each day, and you know, so we started out with Clayster right off the rip. You know, a guy that had just won COD champs, and his entire team had to be completely exploded because E United wasn't going to field a team. So a whole championship team, complete free agents, every single one. And you're like, holy shit, where are they going to go? And yeah, and like, cool, we got one. And so we led with Clay, and his was so cool, too. I remember finding his location and just the bridge, and I was like, oh, this is such a dope bridge. We got to shoot this at night. It's going to be so pretty. And it was sick, man. It was sick. And then his was honestly the fastest that we had to shoot compared to the rest. And even though it was the most rushed, I think it turned out to be one of the best. I think it's because you couldn't linger. You had to just go, go, go. And so the amount of like fluff time you could allow for yourself was just non-existent. But then it became a lot of like editing leapfrog too, where whoever the main editor was still was working on theirs too. But we also had a buddy of mine, Corey Doggett, would also kind of be a tastemaker a little bit to kind of help out, making sure that, you know, the voices were staying consistent from bit to bit. We're giving feedback as we're going through with everybody as a team and just saying, yeah, you know, you're doing good. Or, hey, you need to squeeze up this pacing a little bit. This is dragging. And it was like the most full department collaborative event that we did because it was all hands on deck. Everybody was involved. Whereas a lot of it is like, you know, one player or one producer and an editor kind of focused on just a whole team broadly. Whereas this is like, you know, you're pushing a boulder up.
Yeah.
And, you know, you need everybody to get it up and get it out there. And so it was, yeah, like I equate it to getting the Avengers together because it was literally getting everybody's best ability and putting them in position to do it. I think that's also a large, you know, responsibility of a producer too, is evaluating your team and being able to see what are people's strengths and try to position them to perform their best by giving them the chance to leverage their skill set and then fill against what you're missing if you're able to.
That was an incredible masterclass on how much time how much time goes into this stuff. Because I think that the big jaw dropper, like, and I'm sure there are people who are listening to this, they're like, so like it was a team of 10 people working to make a 2-minute video and they had like hours and hours of footage and like that seems like too much. It's not. It actually, like you described, it's like you had a pretty lean team on that.
Very lean. I think a lot of people think that the team was bigger than it was.
Yeah, and that I think it's always really cool when small teams produce stuff that everyone's like, wow, what a bunch of professionals. I bet they had a full squad of like, you know, 50 people. No. But it takes time and it takes a lot of like effort, creative energy. And I love that you are so open about that, because I know that when people are coming in from content creation, I think a lot of folks go, well, like, there's not really that many roles for me. There's not many that many places I can work. You know, everybody always says, oh, like community management, something like that. The skills that you learn making content are transferable into so many different production verticals that you can join pretty much any team.
Oh, yeah.
And I know you're thinking, well, there's not that much need. Yes, there is. You just listened to all of that need from Mike here. And that was just one project, right? And you have all of these projects running in tandem. There's a lot. It's been surprising to me doing this podcast and bringing more people on how much room there is for you to grow if you've been in content creation for a while. And it doesn't, you know, like everyone's like, oh, going back to McDonald's or whatever. Like that was the joke back in the day. But these skill sets that people have acquired, they can go, they travel so well. They go everywhere.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Speak to that a little bit. I'm sure you had, like you said, you had newbies on your team. You had vets on your team. What's that like?
Sure. So, like just speaking from like a transferable skill set first, from, you know, if you're creating content and you're looking to get into, like, you want to make that a more full-time career, but maybe, you know, maybe your channel isn't like in a position to where it's going to be able to provide and meet your needs. That doesn't mean your time was wasted. Like if anything, you have gained an invaluable skill set, you know, especially in terms of how marketing and businesses are conducting themselves these days. If you don't exist online, which I feel like is such a boomer way to say it, but I can say
it. Boom.
I guess I'm around that
age.
We can boom.
We can boom.
Yes. I got gray hair and a mortgage. I'm totally a boomer. but like it's a transferable skill, because video is king. It's straight up, it's king. And so by knowing even just like a little bit of what goes into just making a stream, a YouTube video or an Instagram post or whatever, and being able to just understand like vague best practices, you're infinitely ahead of a lot of people because you've already been doing it, even if it's just for fun. That is real world experience, because the only thing that is separating you from maybe somebody that went to school is you just learned in different capacities. That doesn't mean that someone is, you know, maybe necessarily better than you at it. Like, look at doctors. Just because somebody's a doctor doesn't mean they're the best doctor in the world. That dude could have been last in his class.
Right. Yeah. Like,
yeah, exactly. He could have barely made it. You don't know. But like, and so the same thing I think can be kind of said true for content as well. A lot of it kind of comes down to whenever I'm evaluating like someone to hire or to work with is what can you do? You know, like, you know, if you look at a resume, it's like, okay, cool. You got experience. That's great. Cool. Show me what you have done, because that is going to communicate a lot to me. You know, if I'm looking at an editor, like right off the rip, the thing I'm looking for, I just swore I saw somebody post about it. I was like, what do you look for in an editor? I was like, I was about to go off on this thing, but I opted not to, because it would have been a long-winded post. But like the main thing, like if I'm looking for an editor, is can you sequence properly? You know, are your sequences good? Do you mix well? You know, how's your music and your sound effects and everything in relation to dialogue? Is everything still discernible? How's your color grade? Are you adding good like padding within your audio tracks if you're having to address like, you know, noise and things like that? Are you addressing that at all? Or if it's motion graphics focused, like what's the variety like? Is it really 2D focused? Is it like 2.5D? Is there any 3D work? You know, is it more like VFX, like with visual effects, like with, you know, explosions and sci-fi? Or are you more so focused on like information and text?
Right.
You know, like this informs me a lot of like what your wheelhouse is. And then I can start to then look at, okay, cool. Will this work well with us? Does this address a need? Does this enhance the team or the project? Now transferring that to from like from your content creation into your professional set, the amount of time you're investing into just learning how to stream and things like that is an insane value. And I could speak from this from a personal experience as someone who just decided to dabble in streaming because I liked watching, you know, Ben and Goth and Laced Up Lauren, because I was stuck driving a 18 wheeler from Anaheim back to Dallas because I couldn't play Destiny at launch. And so I was watching people play and I'm like, this looks fun. And just kind of kept watching them and, you know, felt like I was still being included in the launch. And then my wife was watching me watch Twitch while she was watching a movie that I didn't want to watch, but we're still
in physical
proximity
hanging
together.
Out.
And she's like,
stuff.
Yeah. It's like, are you playing Destiny? And I'm like, no, I'm watching this guy playing. Like, what's really cool too is this is how he provides for his family. This is his job. And she was like, really? I'm like, yeah. And she's like, do you want to give it a try? Like, I didn't think you would ever
that's
be
wild.
Okay with it, but
so cool.
Hell yeah. And yeah. And so that's kind of what got me into at least just learning about OBS. And I had no idea how valuable of a skill set that was going to be until I moved into esports and how a lot of how we do our tournaments and then other live content as well. It was so beneficial to have a foundation of OBS, you know, learning how your sources work, your mixes, how to set your canvases up properly and your ins and outs and everything. Like that made me like insanely qualified just to keep picking up different kinds of projects and then scale up as well, or different recording environments. Like if I needed to do a tips video and we needed to record gameplay and also film somebody and doing, you know, single or dual PC setups, like it was beneficial. It was super beneficial to have known how to do it from my own just curiosity, because one, I felt like that's where media was going to be transitioning to. So that was also part of the curiosity as well, was just to improve myself as a professional. But I also really just enjoyed it. It's fun for me. And it makes it to where like gaming is never going to be a solo experience for the rest of my life. It'll always be
shared,
an activity. Yeah. It'll always be with other people. Exactly. But that is, it was such a beneficial skill set. And so all that long-winded to say, like the time that you put in is going to set you up to where you're going to have something in your pocket that is a skill set that makes you usable. You are a valuable teammate. You have something to contribute. Even if it's like just improving how somebody has their scene structure, like maybe they're just choking their CPU and you can identify that by just looking at OBS. Like, dude, you could nest some of these scenes and sources and you're going to instantly shave down like, you know, X amount of CPU usage and it's going to be a more efficient system. Or you just, you know, there could be another way to approach how to just set up their scene transitions because you've done it yourself. There's something big to be gained there too. So I would never look at your time in content creation as a waste. And if anything, I would encourage you to be even more curious to try to push yourself to just try different things in your own content, because that could serve you somewhere else later down the line and you don't even know it.
That was an incredible answer. Just to piggyback, like knowing how to use OBS is so, it's going to continue to be so crucially valuable as we watch TikTok and Instagram and everybody begin to integrate deeper production tools, some of which are built directly off the back end of OBS. Your ability to operate OBS is a massive boon to pretty much any company at this point, because everybody needs to be a media company at the, you know, right now. Everyone's got to get their stuff out there, unless you work in like, you know, a different, like there's a few marketplaces where maybe it's not necessary, but for any consumer facing brands, it is a need that they are going to have to start filling. And if the U.S. Live streaming market goes the way that it has in China, like live stream QVC for everybody all the time is going to be a crucial part of a lot of people's sales strategies.
Absolutely. And I can already even like that's going.
I mean, it's already happening now. It's just
it's
not
happening right now.
Not at massive scale like it is.
I would argue that we're starting to see the beginning. I think it's starting.
Well, look,
yeah,
I mean, if you look at Prime Day, Prime Day just happened, and live streams for Prime Day were front and center on Amazon's primary page. It's like so-and-so household person, and then like coming up next is this guy with tech, and then after that it's this person with automotive. And I was like, dang, you know, they're really Prime Day, if you're a live streamer on the Amazon page, like you're making some good money on Prime Day. I was like, this is cool. Mm-hmm. It's cool to see. So it's happening right in front of us. Mike, thank you so much for joining me today. We've come to the end of our time, but I would love to ask if you have any advice or anything that you want to pitch, any projects you're working on, if you want to let everybody know you're for hire, whatever you want to do. The floor is yours.
Sure. So yeah, I'm actually currently fielding different options for a new gig. But I also do stream a few different times a week. You can find me at twitch.tv/MikeBodkin. And if I could leave any just note for anybody that has any interest in anything creative, whether that's streaming, video, or maybe you're just trying to figure out what you want to do. This is going to be kind of like an amalgamation of a few things that I've heard Ben say, and then also like other people. You know, just by existing on this planet, you've already won one of the biggest races ever, and that's to be a human being. You know, not to get crude, but you've outfought a legion of sperm to become a human being. So you won. Exactly. You were a Michael Phelps at one point. You were the fittest out of a legion. So just by existing, you're an amazing, valuable person. So you owe it to yourself to at least try to do something that either sets your heart on fire or you just want to try. And even if it comes across as like, maybe this is a little crazy, I don't know, this may not work, I encourage you, try.
Yeah.
Shoot your shot. Have fun. Because you only get one go at this life, and you never know when that bill of services is going to come due. So I encourage you to just always push yourself and have fun. And if you ever need someone to give feedback on, you know, getting into the industry, my DMs are always open on Twitter, on Discord, or you can find me on Twitch as well. I'm happy to help anybody figure out a way to get in the door, or, you know, how they could maybe find a way to, you know, get involved in media as well, whether that's from a film and TV side or, you know, even just from YouTube as well. I'm happy to help anybody that is looking to give it a shot.
Mike, this has been absolutely incredible. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you're listening to the podcast, you can rate and subscribe if you want. But more important to me is if you could share this with somebody that you thought of while you were listening. We do this so that we can spread all of this incredible information to the people who need to hear it, and you're better at identifying them than I am. So thank you so much for listening. I'm Professor Broman. You can find me anywhere. You just type in Professor Broman in your favorite search engine, and I'm sure it'll give you information that you want. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye, everybody.